This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good evening, everyone. You are on Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9.
I'm Emma. Patrick has joined us. Oh. Emma is panelling for us, which is very decent of him.
Well, what is on the show tonight, Emma?
Tonight we are going to scratch the surface of a topic that causes a fair bit of disadvantage to a lot of our community and a lot of other communities, and that's privilege.
Bum bum.
And it's something that those that have it don't really acknowledge it and don't want to give it up, and those that don't have it are very, very aware. To help us with this little conundrum, we'll be joined tonight by Dr. Damien Riggs from Flinders University. Good evening, Damien.
Good evening.
What I'll do first, I'll just give a little bit of your background. You lecture in the discipline of social work at Flinders. You're currently president of the Australian Critical Race and Whiteness Studies Association and the national convener of the Australian Psychological Society's interest group on gay and lesbian issues and the editor of its journal, the Gay and Lesbian Issues in Psychology Review. I'm not even going to start to list your publications. There's just too many. Very prolific. And we're really pleased to have you join us to talk to us about privilege. Now, in swapping emails over the last couple of days, you really wanted to have a bit of a discussion around race privilege in particular, with reference to Australia. But I guess we start with, what do you see privilege as?
You know, it's interesting. Today I opened Facebook and Courtney Act, who you may know, famous drag queen, Australian, had posted about how happy she was to see that Apple is going to be introducing a new range of emojis for your iPhone that will allow you to have a range of different skin colours. So instead of just the normal white faces, there'll be brown faces and yellow faces. Literally, if you look it up, this is literally the colours.
And every single thing under the rainbow, basically.
Lots of different skin colours, but my concern, which I commented to a few friends today, is that they're all the same face. They're just different colours. So they're the same basic emoji we would know if anyone's got an iPhone. They're very Anglo-European-looking faces. And all they've done is change the skin colour on each one, or the tone, the shade of the colour of the emoji.
Because they're supposed
to me,
that's
privilege to me. That's a really easy, simple example of what privilege is.
Not even a nod to race characteristics at all in that, is there?
No, and I think that's what it means to me to have privilege. And I'm speaking as a white person, as a cisgender person. This is what it means, that I can expect that there would have been emojis, and there have been since the beginning of them, that look enough like me, that I don't use one in a text and think that really looks nothing at all like me, even if the nose is wrong or the eye colour's wrong. And that if someone somehow deigned that they would then be a bit more inclusive, that still all the emojis would somehow look like me, just with a slightly different skin colour. So to me, that's like I haven't used that exact example when I've been teaching students, but to me, that's, you know, an example like what I would use to think about how privilege makes it easy for certain groups to move around in the world.
Mm. Damien, I'm curious to know, this is Patrick here, in terms of, because as you said, you yourself are a white cisgendered male, and your discussion and your work has been based around privilege. Looking at fellow, and I'm a white cisgendered male, I'm gay, but that's almost close to being heteronormative now. Apparently we're accepted. I saw it because Neil Patrick Harris exists. I digress. Do you believe, though, that people who are also white, how well do they acknowledge this in Australia?
Well, I mean, and this is always a tricky thing. Like, you know, we've already gone into a number of identity categories already. I started that. And, you know, white is not a homogenous category either. So there's a whole range of different ways in which people experience their whiteness, and that's often around class. It's around mobility, it's around access. So, you know, when we start talking about privilege and we talk about dominant groups like white people or cisgender people, heterosexual people, we always have to be aware that, that privilege is also about capital. So there's a norm. We all know what that sort of norm is in society, and lots of things, policies, government decisions are based on that norm. But people only sort of approximate it to certain degrees. So you can be white and heterosexual and be a woman, and your access to the capital of privilege is going to be different. I'm not saying less or more, but it's going to be different to a white heterosexual man. So this, you know, there's lots of nuances that we have to really unpack when we think about privilege and race or gender or so forth.
Do Australian, I'll just put it bluntly, do white Australians in particular, are they good at acknowledging their privilege?
I mean, again, that's funny. I guess what I was trying to answer before is I think that it depends who you talk to.
Yeah.
If I look at my Facebook and I look at my friends, which are probably, you know, a selective cohort, then 70% maybe yes. But just the other day I was aware that there's, you know, I can't remember the name. I think I've blocked it out. There's some rallies that we should all be very concerned about that are going to happen around the country next month, which are rallies of white Anglo-European Australians rallying to say Australia should be kept. It should be returned, I think is the language. Reclaiming Australia.
That's the Tea Party just in Australia.
To say we should have, or certainly either we should not have allow Muslim people to be in Australia. Mm. If we do, then there should be no mosques, there should be no halal.
Yeah, so basically because, of course, white people had such a claim to Australia in the first place, didn't they? And note my sarcasm.
Very ironic, isn't it?
I find that ridiculous. Sorry, I won't rant. We all know what the end result is. I get cranky and we all know the truth.
And so it's something I was talking to a friend about today is that I don't think the Anglo-Saxon Australians, I don't think they run around thinking of themselves as white. But I think a lot of other migrant sources of migrant people and the indigenous people in Australia are made to be very aware that they are not white. And it's
the fact that we are white. I think that's the relationship of privilege is one and the other. There's one, privilege only works by one group being privileged, having cultural capital, enacting, utilising that capital. Yeah. And another group being denied capital. But you're right. I think but I do think that when you see telly shows like, you know, Go Back to Where You Came From and other things like that, whiteness is really visible. And I think it's really visible to white people because then they go, oh, right. Well, you're someone we don't want as part of whiteness. We don't want as part of this nation. And I think that's when it becomes salient. It's often, if you're in a group of white people, it's very rare perhaps that whiteness is salient, but I don't think it's never salient.
You are in Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9.
I want to talk about privilege and more specifically privilege around sexuality and gender identity and how that happens and just what happens in the community that we're just not aware of, that we don't see.
And I think, you know, it's interesting that you raise that because that's actually how I first came to do my PhD on privilege was because I had been studying, I had been doing women's studies topics, I'd been learning about race and whiteness, and really I thought I understood, you know, how whiteness worked and how privilege worked, but I still kept having this nagging question of, but I'm gay, so it doesn't, I'm not quite as privileged as, you know, a white heterosexual man, and that was really the turning point for me to really understand that, sure, you know, as a gay man, I experience having my life experience discrimination. But the really important but is that I do so as a white gay man. So there's always a moderation going on there. It's always, sure, violence against white gay men is rife, it's dangerous, it threatens people's lives, but it takes different forms and that vulnerability is different to other groups of people, other groups of gay men. So to me, that was a really important thing to understand was that these things affect all of us differently.
There's a whole list, there's a whole, I guess, sort of a matrix, or it was referred to a couple of decades ago as a knapsack of privileges that everybody has.
Oh.
And everyone is unique in how they react emotionally to the privileges they have, how they use them, but also how they react where privilege of others is used against them. And it's an absolutely personal thing, isn't it?
It's personal, but it's public. It's sort of, you know, that these things don't come out of nowhere. They don't come out of the ether. They come from living in societies where particular groups are privileged over others. So there's a very, but it, that's the tricky part, is that we don't want to sort of fall into this individualized account of privilege, because then it becomes, well, people should just give it up. So there's the notion of the race traitor. You should just give it up, which I think isn't sort of logical. But the other part of it is that, you know, it isn't entirely social as well. People are invested in it. You know, I think part of these rallies that we've got coming up, the Reclaim Australia ones, that are coming up, are about people having an investment in trying to maintain this idea of a white Australia.
Is there, and this is something I've asked myself over the last couple of weeks, the connection between someone having race privilege and being racist?
Yeah, and that's probably why my PhD thesis, which, you know, is quite old now, was on race privilege, because I'm in psychology. That's where my training was, even though I'm in social work now. And in psychology, there's a lot more focus on racism. Mm. So the racist things that people do. But I don't think that's ever gotten us anywhere very far.
It's more the earliest words, with all the privileges, you know, ageist, sexist, and so on. And if someone, they may not even know they are exercising race privilege, not conscious of it. Does that make them a racist, or is it just incidental or accidental?
Well, that's the function of privilege, isn't it? It's invisible to the people who have it, and I think that's why it's so stubborn to change, and why people will nod and smile if you raise it in a group of white people, or a group of heterosexual people, or a group of white and heterosexual people, about their privilege. You know, the average person, certainly the person left of the centre politically, will nod and agree. They're not going to do anything to give up that privilege. They're not going to stop moving in the places they move in with the freedom they do.
Yeah.
So it's a complex thing to challenge, because people, as you said earlier, often don't see it. And when they do see it, then they still don't know how to do anything about that.
Well, if they do see it, they see it in others. They don't see it in themselves.
Mm. Yes, true.
Damien, I'm curious to speak a little bit also about the understanding that we have, I suppose, in the rainbow community. There is a type of gay privilege I can see myself, is that, and certainly that does come in regards to race as well. In particular, among the sort of the gay male, there is a type of privilege of white men in this regard. I mean, you just have to look at look at any of the media that you see that's gay media, and it's often, you know, these hunky, also I don't know how you'd call beauty privilege. I don't know what the correct term for that would be, but, you know, they appreciate these people who are very standardly attractive. What I'm trying to get out of this whole conundrum is, do you think that, especially our rainbow community, we need to also look within ourselves about what our problems with privilege are, and then looking externally as well to the rest of the world?
I think so. And I've done a little bit of research on this, but Danton Kalander from Sydney has done his whole thesis on this, which was looking at, I mean, you can use lots of different terms for it: sexual racism, gay racism, white gay men's privilege, but how we see these things on things like Grindr or Scruff, and people writing, you know, horrendous things like, you know, no rice or no curry or things like that are, you know, racist.
Also, I suppose,
and they're not so you can have, as you said, a particular kind of body, and whether some people privilege, you know, buff bodies or hairy bodies or whatever, but if you're not the right cultural group, you're still not going to meet that aesthetic. Mm. So it's a particular set of interactions around, you know, a bodily norm and race.
There's also a type of masculine privilege as well among these, among this, because you do see the, you know, the straight acting ideal, and it's this kind of attack upon any same-sex attracted men who express a type of femininity in their own gender identity, and are also shunned as well, you know, no matter how much they are, because what was it? There's a beautiful thing that's on YouTube recently, which is particularly about, what was it? If guys acted like they do in real life, like they do on Grindr. Sorry, ladies. But, you know, it's basically a guy that opens up and he says, no fats, no femmes, no Asians. And of course, there is a larger bodied man, there is an Asian guy and a femme guy, and all of them just like glare at him going, and one of them says, oh, hell no. But it's true. I mean, would you do this in real life? Would you go up to someone and say, you know what, you're Asian. No. Or that it's, it does show there's this kind of, I know that I, that in it, maybe not literally, but I know subtly, I've got the upper hand. Yeah. Or subconsciously.
And I think, I mean, the you know, the wonderful work that Professor Raewon Connell has been doing for many years is looking at why some of these things take place. And her argument, I think, would be that, you know, there's a norm of masculinity, which is a particular, you know, ruggedness, heterosexuality, et cetera. So gay men already have a removed relationship to that. And gay men, some gay men, not all of us, but some gay men are then invested in trying to say, yeah, but I want a piece of that as well. I'm straight acting, I'm butch, I'm masculine, all that sort of language. I think, you know, sort of not wanting to put words in Raewon's mouth, but, you know, that's what's going on there, is that that people know there's a norm, and if you're already outside of the norm, then you need to do the best you can to approximate that norm to claim your piece of the privilege pie.
You're on Lefty Pinko's on Joy 94.9. We have Damien Riggs on the line from Adelaide. Damien, I want to talk just to this section about people transitioning, coming out, and in the process, dumping a lot of the privilege that they have had, and not necessarily being aware of what they're getting into. And an example I read recently was someone on a trans board asking those who transitioned if they had experienced a lot of sexism, because if they had, they weren't sure if they wanted to transition.
Mm.
And that seemed, if you're asking that question, the need probably isn't there. But it was an interesting thought. And then I thought, well, what happens if someone perceived as straight comes out as gay? What then happens? And I haven't, other than people warning, having warnings to transgender folk that they need to expect that they will be treated differently, I think more a behavioural thing, I think, probably than a privileged one. I was wondering if you'd ever had any thoughts about what happens when someone just changes quite radically, and what that does for their privilege.
Like every single question we have this evening, I think that's really complicated, and certainly I can't speak for trans people, but I was just happened to be a sort of interesting timing. Today's session was about, the other day I was doing some reading about writings by trans feminists, so writing specifically about what a trans feminism would be, and obviously this is, well, not obviously, but this was trans women writing about this. So one particular woman was saying that, look, you know, it's understandable that when we transition, some people might call us out, and particularly cisgender feminists might call us out on our privilege. Mm. And she was saying, look, it's really complicated, because of course we want to challenge that and say, well, look, A, I've always been a woman, even if some people thought I wasn't, and B, you know, I've lived a life of being discriminated against and being oppressed, and even now, perhaps after transitioning, I'm still experiencing transphobia. But at the same time, the particular author of this particular piece on transfeminism I was reading was saying, but at the same time, we need to stop and listen to these critiques. We need to acknowledge that whether or not a person may have experienced themselves as male or not, other people may have read that person as male and may have accorded privilege to that person. Mm. And that shapes the way you move in the world. And I think what was being really well said in this piece was they're not mutually exclusive. You can acknowledge histories of privilege without denying experiences of transphobia, without denying experiences of never feeling like you should have had male privilege because you weren't male. So I think it's like everything we're talking about today, there's no easy answer.
And it often is about there's no right answer either, is there?
No right answer. And yeah, certainly it's about acknowledging that these things are, this is, I guess, why we're still grappling with this idea of privilege, I think, even for those of us who are, you know, totally up to speed on it, is that it's so nuanced.
Yeah, I think an example I read recently, and it was an article, I think, penned by Rizzi Tamaina himself. He was born in Nigeria as a girl, raised as a girl, but always thought of himself as a boy, but didn't think there's anything he could do about it. Well, being a lesbian girl in northern Nigeria is not the most privileged position you can be in, probably it's about the bottom of the heap. He moved to the United States and transitioned to male. And in the process, gained all the male privilege. But what I don't think he had reckoned on, because he called it out quite specifically, is that he had transitioned to be one of the least valued members of the community in the US at the moment. And that's a young black man. And I don't think he'd quite expected it. And when he was presenting as female, his wife never admonished him when he left to go to work to be careful. Once he was presenting as male, she was warning him that if he was pulled over to leave his hands on the steering wheel, or the police would think he was reaching for a weapon and he would get shot. And he was quite, I think he's quite stunned with that, the radical change. But at the same time, he's absolutely joyous with the change that he's found. But I was wondering whether people really expect that radical a change, but it must be a shock to the system when you get it.
And I think, I mean, that's a really good example of, for me, that I'm always a limit to how interested I am in talking about white privilege on its own, or any kind of privilege on its own, because it's not on its own. It's always in a relationship to someone else's vulnerability. And I think that's where I'm not so much in the field anymore, but in the field of race and whiteness studies, you know, it's always this continual problem of it becomes yet another opportunity for white people to talk about whiteness, which is, you know, the vast majority of academia anyway.
Yeah.
So it's always going to sit, I think, in a relationship to other people's vulnerability. It's sort of a bit useless for me to just say, oh, I'm acknowledging that I'm privileged for X, Y, and Z. Yeah, I'm acknowledging that because other people are not. And that then gives you the impetus to act. How do you, and that's, you know, always my concern when people say, well, what about this call for rights or this call for rights in this country or another country? But my first question is always, who is the most vulnerable? Who has the least amount of rights? Do I wish everyone had all the rights they wanted? Maybe, but, you know, to me, the first
port of call. Except a Tony Abbott.
Yeah, perhaps. To me, the first port of call is always going to be the most vulnerable people. Otherwise, you're just sort of perpetuating privilege in another form.
And that is one of the reasons why we support Indigenous artists on this program, on Lefty Pinkos, because they really are, Indigenous Australians are very disadvantaged. Compared to
the rest
of us.
I would feel rather sick if this may happen. So I may feel sick, but I will feel sick. But, you know, if we have something like marriage equality come about in the imminent years to come, and we still have transgender people being murdered, we still have high Indigenous, you know, children death rates, low life expectancies, we still have people being stopped from coming into this country and treated as illegal, like, that would make me feel really ill, because what, you know, which one is more vulnerable?
Damien, may I just point out that this is, I completely agree, and it is something that does worry me in a lot of the discussion, that especially when people sort of in our community look towards marriage equality, that they do seem to neglect the vulnerability of other groups, especially inside our own rainbow community, about trans people, intersex people, people who identify outside the gender binaries, and, of course, people of colour inside our queer community, and migrants as well.
Damien, we've run out of time.
That was quick.
Yes, I know.
it's because time goes by when you've got an intelligent man on the other end of the phone.
Thank you very, very much for your time this evening. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Damien.
Thanks.
You are here on Lefty Pinkos. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.